My brother keeps a human head in his closet. I hope I don't end up that way.
This thing, it's gonna follow you. Somebody gave it to me, and I passed it to you. It could look like someone you know, or it could be a stranger in a crowd. It could look like anyone.
Help! Santa Claus only brings presents to them that's been good all year. To the ones that ain't done nothing naughty. All the other ones. All the naughty ones. He punishes you. See Santa Claus tonight, you better run, boy. You better run for your life.
Bring me one of those chickens.
You got money to pay for it?
You paid for it.
No, but we're the king's men. So, you got money?
Not a penny. I'll still take that chicken.
You don't seem to understand the situation.
I understand that if any more words come pouring out your mouth, I'm going to have to eat every chicken in this room.
You lived your life for the king. You're gonna die for some chickens.
Someone is.
The symbol is associated with a pagan deity named Bagul. He consumes the souls of human children. Early Christians believed that Bagul actually lived in the images themselves and that they were gateways into his realm.
I am seriously positive these were not here. How would we have, just made a campsite in between three piles of rocks just by coincidence?
You don't think this is strange?
Hello, and welcome once again to Discretion, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you, sir?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
This is Mike.
Mike, how are you, sir?
I'm okay.
And in the state of Massachusetts?
Hi, everyone. This is Abe here.
Abe, how's it going, sir?
I'm doing well.
Excellent. And a Connecticut American?
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how's it going?
It's going awesome. Thanks for asking.
Excellent. So we have a full house tonight. Who we are? We are Dark Discussions Podcast, where we discuss a genre film each week, critique, review, decipher, and just talk about it in general. So horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno-thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, midnight movies, cult films, and whatnot. We also try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. Before we get into our topic tonight, we're going to do news and all that at the end. We do want folks to know where they can find us. Abe, where can they find us?
You can visit us at darkdiscussions.com. All the episodes we have uploaded up there are for free to listen to, and there'll be more to come that we have in the back burner. Also, if you have want to read some articles or listen to other podcasts, if you look on your right-hand side, links to those sources are right there.
Excellent. Eric, what else can they find on that website?
They can find the link to our Patreon account. Patreon is an online service that allows you to support your online artists, like podcasters. That's us. Producing this show is not free. We have to pay for things like server hosting and new equipment and all that sort of stuff. So if you'd like to help us offset the cost of producing the podcast, you can follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com or go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. For every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover on the show. We take all the submissions and draw them on a quarterly basis. For more details, you can go to darkdiscussions.com and follow the link, or go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions.
That's right. And we do have a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, where you can join us and discuss all things genre. And within a week or two, start looking out for You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, a Game of Thrones podcast where me, Eric, and Mike discuss weekly each episode of the HBO's award-winning show. All right. So I think that's it. So with all that stated, Eric, why don't you let everybody know what we're going to discuss tonight?
All right. Tonight, we are going to be discussing the latest movie from horror master Jordan Peele, the box office smash hit, Us.
I got five on it.
Let's take the dice out of the bag.
classic right there. I got five on it. Messing
with what does I got five on it mean?
It's about drugs.
It's not about drugs. It's a dope song. Don't do drugs.
Get in rhythm.
There you go. There you go. Creep on
in, on in, on in. Can't believe how big they've got.
Did you hear Gabe got a boat?
He's kidding, right?
He's not kidding.
Hey, I think it's vodka o'clock.
Oh, yeah.
Where's Jason?
Jason?
Where were you?
I didn't know if you were lost. Stick with me, and I'll keep you safe.
There's a family in our driveway.
It's probably the neighbors. But y'all scared of a family?
Hi, can I help you?
Zora, put your shoes on.
If you want to get crazy, we can get crazy.
What are you people?
It's us.
They look exactly like us. They think like us. They know where we are. We need to move and keep moving. They won't stop until they kill us. Or we kill them.
That's right. Us is a 2019 film, second horror film by Jordan Peele, maybe a second film altogether, at least feature length, but I'm not sure. Mike, you may know. It was also written by him and co-produced by him. This is a Blumhouse film, Universal Distribution, budget of $20 million. So far, our box office is $114 million. I'm not sure if that's worldwide or not, but for its debut weekend, it grossed around $70 million, which is the highest grossing film ever for a horror film. It outperformed Prometheus, Halloween, The Quiet Place.
I want to gently correct you on that, Phil. It is the highest release that's not a sequel or a remake.
There you go.
That is not Avatar.
Right.
Right. But yeah, right. I mean, Avatar,
it's the highest grossing live action original feature since Avatar.
Okay. All right. So that's even more impressive than just being a horror film. The film is getting fairly good reviews, about 92% on Rotten Tomatoes, released on March 22nd in the United States. And it is, as I noted, another Blumhouse film with Universal distributing it, starring Lupita Nyong'o, Winston Duke are probably the two leads of the film, and various other folks, including Elizabeth Moss and Tim Heidecker. And that's pretty much all I got for the film. So I guess we can go around and discuss how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So, Chrissy, why don't you start?
I heard about this film because it was a trailer in front of some other movie that I was seeing for Dark Discussions. I would like to preface this by saying I saw it Tuesday night. It was $5 night. I saw this with a fantastic audience. I don't think I've had as enthusiastic an audience as this one in a very long time for a horror movie. It was even more enthusiastic than when I went to see Halloween. We had a nervous giggler, and every time one of the doppelgangers got killed, people applauded. People were shouting out comments. People were screaming. People were gasping. It was just a really fun ride. And at one point in the movie, I was so involved that I was going, oh my fucking God, oh my fucking God, oh my fucking God, because I was really freaking out and wasn't conscious of the fact that I was actually like speaking aloud. And the guy in front of me turned around and he went, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. I was like, I thought that was really great. He was really good about it. I'm pretty much just going to repeat the comments that I kind of made on my Facebook page because people were asking me. So it's spoiler free. It takes a lot for me to say something like this is one of the best, if not best, horror film that I have seen probably in at least the last 5 years. Honestly, it really did scare the living shit out of me. I thought the Us were so subtly done that that is what made them completely terrifying. I think it's rife with symbolism and it's got a lot of metaphor in it. I did not think, however, that it was in a way that was pretentious. The film felt complete to me, and while it conveyed a message, I didn't feel that it beat you over the head with it. I loved Get Out, but I felt like that message was really heavy-handed. I also loved that this was a thinking person's movie. I thought the acting was astonishing simply because these people had to play themselves as well as their mirrors, and yet they managed to look slightly different just from the expressions on their faces. I thought the amount of gore was really balanced. It wasn't overdone. Even though it was still kind of toe-curling, it wasn't over the top. I thought it was appropriate for the film. There were some nice breaks of humor, which provided a break in the tension, which I think we needed, but it wasn't like stupid humor. It was really intelligent humor. I think that there were things that were not explained, but I was okay with that. I didn't think that they necessarily needed to be. There was some intensely disturbing imagery, but overall, I thought this movie was really original, that the story was original. He took a few classic doppelganger ideas, and the themes of duality and identity, which I think were probably first explored in Edgar Allan Poe's short story, William Wilson. And he took those things and he twisted them into something that was unexpected. And I went into this expecting either a body snatcher film or a doppelganger legend film. And that is not what I got. I got totally not what I was expecting. And I think for me personally, this is going to be very tough to unseat this as my number one film this year. However, I do understand that there are going to be people who do not like this film, who do not think it's good, who don't connect with it. So I think it's going to be interesting to see. And also, I have not read any reviews, pre or post film. I have not read any criticism. I haven't read anything. This is just me talking. So that's it.
All right. Very good. Abe.
Well, I heard about this film beforehand when we were kind of keep my eyes open for potential films to check out for 2019. And this was among the films I was really looking forward to because I really enjoyed Get Out. And it's, you know, the trailer's really, you know, I think it's one of the things is that it advertises the film really well. It didn't spoil anything. It didn't try so hard desperately to grab your attention, but did it just right in a way that, you know, you got you intrigued. And so I kept my eyes open for this film that's released. And overall, I thought this was a great film. I think Jordan Peele really has a knack for horror. I thought the cast was phenomenal, and I really think it really says a lot about their talents when they're able to play both their human side and the tethered, these doppelgangers. So a very demanding job, especially in the way that each character behaves and each, you know, with how they tick. I also really love the soundtrack. I thought it has a really cool soundtrack, especially the opening number that plays over the credits. I thought it was really unnerving. I did think there are some points in the film that were stronger than others. I thought the first act and then the last act was pretty strong. I was kind of mixed on the middle act of the film. But it wasn't, you know, anything severe that took away from the film. I think in terms of where I could place this, it's certainly going to be very high. But we're only in March. We're just looking at the April, so it might be some time before I really figure out where I'm going to place this. Certainly going to be high, probably the top 10. But number one, I have no idea. You know, this year could surprise me. But it is a film that does have a lot of cool, as Christy said, symbolisms, metaphors, things to examine, to really dissect. And I thought it was really cool. And overall, it's a fun film. It's really, really solid horror film. It takes a concept and kind of gives it its own spin to it. I also add on to what Christy said, but there are some things that aren't explained, and that could be a problem for some and maybe not for others. I was kind of in the middle of in between those things, but as I said, overall, it's a good film. I definitely recommend checking this out. I really am hoping that Jordan Peele can keep this up, because he has two really good films so far. And, you know, as long as he keeps his ideas fresh and he's able to bring out the best in his actors and his script, I think he can go for number three.
Okay, very good. Mike.
Yeah, so I saw this. When did I see this? Did I see this opening night? I'm trying to remember. It's been busy.
Well, you've seen it since opening night.
Well, I have seen it since opening night. It's hard not to. So, yeah, I think I saw. Yes, I did see it opening night with Pam. Pam Nine Toes, we'll call her now. I heard about it like most people. You know, Get Out was a massive hit, and they announced his next project, as studios will do. I liked the film a lot. I don't think I loved it yet. I need to see. I did want to see it again, and I haven't had a chance to do it. Jordan Peele himself says that the movie's, unlike Get Out, which is very obvious metaphor. This is intended as more of a Rorschach test, meaning that people will see it differently depending on who they are. And I could see a few different possibilities. And I don't know which ones really will fit everything, because there's an info dump at the end that explains stuff and that recontextualizes some aspects of the film. So I'm curious to watch it again and see how the revelations at the end change my watching of the film from the beginning. I really mostly think that they did a good job. That Jordan Peele did a good job, getting some like creepiness and scares. And I think, I really enjoyed Get Out. I think as a creepy horror movie, the first hour or maybe the middle half hour, however you want to call it, kind of worked for me better as a horror film. I wasn't as fond of the ending, the last 20 minutes or so, which gave a lot of exposition. And I didn't find quite as entertaining. Mileage will vary. It wasn't horrible by any means, but I just thought the last act was relatively weak compared to the rest of the film. So I certainly recommend it. It would most likely be on a top 20 for my list. I would not even think about putting it at number one yet, or at least not after one viewing.
All right, very good. I saw it on Sunday or Saturday afternoon, Philly. Acceptable crowd for that time frame. I heard about the film. I think I saw a trailer, unfortunately, because I hate trailers, last year in front of a film, maybe Halloween or something like that. And that's how I first heard about it. And then I think it was you, Abe, that may have brought it up in our 2019 preview episode. And so that's when it kind of began to stick in my mind as a film of note. I think I'm right exactly where Mike is, 100%, right on the dot. I liked the first two acts, and then the third act, I was a bit disappointed. I think it's an odd film because it's more of an allegory than a straight film. Because I originally texted Eric saying it felt art house, and he says, not really. And then when I really look back, it feels more like an allegory-type film rather than art house. So with the rabbits and this whole underground thing, I won't go into details until the spoiler era, and all that other stuff, and that kind of made me say, okay, all right, so maybe it's an allegory. And then I started reading critiques about it, and as you said, Mike, depending on what you feel about politics or society or about hamburger, it doesn't matter, will determine whether or not what you see in the
Toss
film.
Toss of pepper.
And, right. Some people say it's hamburger. Some people say it's minced meat. In Europe, they call it minced. But either way, I could see that because a lot of critics, some leaning left, some leaning right, actually saw completely different films from each other. I said, that's really interesting in it. And I could see both sides saying, yeah, that's that or that's that. I'm not blown away by the film. I guess I've been getting more into more suspension of disbelief, where once you suspend the disbelief, you can believe it could happen. So like A Quiet Place or Hereditary or something like that, or even Upgrade. And this, if you do a suspension of disbelief, it still can't necessarily be true, because again, we're talking what I feel anyway, an allegorical film. But all in all, it's a good film. I don't know if it would make a top 10, maybe a top 20, but I'm not really sure yet. And as Abe said, it's still wicked early to really determine. But it's a good sophomore effort by Jordan Peele. Eric?
I heard about this somewhere. I don't remember where. But I went and saw it at 9:30 on a Sunday morning because I prefer not to deal with audiences.
Amen.
Although there was still a number of people in the theater, there were probably about 20 people there, which is actually a pretty good show for 9:30 on a Sunday.
If I could interject for 1 second, Eric was texting me complaining about having to go to a theater with people in it.
I was, because people suck.
While you were in the theater?
No.
People suck all the time, Mike.
No. Were you texting people?
No. I texted him 2 days before I went and saw the movie.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can hear.
Because I was going to say that would make you one of those sucky people.
Yes, it would. I really like this movie a lot. I think that Lupita Nyong'o gives an award-winning performance. She's amazing in this movie. I agree with Abe that the soundtrack is amazing. There's some great music in this movie. People are talking about Winston Duke. He was fine, but he didn't really do it for me. I mean, he didn't detract from the movie, but I didn't find him a high point of the movie either. I think I like the kids better than I liked him. The kids, particularly in their other roles, I thought really were great. I also really liked Elizabeth Moss. As everybody's been saying, clearly, this isn't just a straight story. There's all sorts of symbolism and metaphors and everything. And ultimately, I think the movie collapses under its own weight a little bit. I think he's trying to say too much in this movie, so that in the end you really don't get a clear message. And I understand what Mike was saying that about Jordan Peele's comments on the movie, but at the same time, while Get Out was a little heavy-handed and hit you over the head a little bit, I kind of prefer that a little bit and walking away with a clear message than this movie, where at the end it's like, what happened? Eh? And I've been reading articles like Phil has, and I've seen directly opposing interpretations of the movie, which is kind of fascinating. At the same time, it's like if that can be interpreted in that wild a swing of interpretation, maybe the message wasn't delivered as clearly as it might have been. But ultimately, I thought this was a great movie. It's at the top of my list right now. I would be really surprised if it doesn't end up in my top five at the end of the year.
All right, very good. So, us 2019. Eric, do we have a wiki?
Wiki. This is pretty straightforward. A family's serenity turns to chaos when a group of doppelgangers begins to terrorize them.
Ooh, that's a not good. That kind of gives away a little bit.
Well,
it says doppelgangers. Yeah. Doppelgangers.
Yeah, but at the same time, they give that away in the trailer. So
yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't see the trailer. I avoided it, so I did not know.
So did I, but most people are evil like Mike and watch trailers.
Yeah.
That's because trailers are awesome.
Yeah,
trailers.
I mean, I saw, like I said, partial the trailer in front of Halloween, but that was before I used to walk out of, and I just used my phone instead until the trailers were over. So I didn't really pay attention. So I didn't know it was anything to do with doppelgangers, so I'm kind of glad I didn't read the wiki. All right, so very well. So what do we want to do?
I'm gonna request that we throw the spoiler flag up nice and early in this episode.
Yeah.
Because this is gonna be it's almost impossible to discuss this movie without spoiling.
So you have to get into the nitty gritty to really talk about it.
I think this movie is impossible to discuss without spoilers. Let's just do it.
All right. Before we do throw the spoiler, I just will ask anybody. Well, let me just ask you, Mike, because everybody else, I'm good either way, but the other three said they would prefer to talk after the spoiler. Anything that you wanted to bring up in general about the film before we do throw up the spoiler?
Mike? Nothing I can think of.
Okay, very good. All right, so we'll throw up the spoiler. So the spoiler is up. You got our reviews, meaning how we felt about the film. So if you haven't seen the film and you don't want to be spoiled based off of our interpretations, critiques, and whatnot. It's time to flee. Otherwise, here we go. So the spoiler is up, and we will talk about anything and everything about this film.
I do, before we start.
Too late.
Well, I did want to mention before it was skipped, I liked a lot the opening factoid that there are thousands of tunnels under the United States and, of course, elsewhere in the world. It's not just here in this country. It basically says that there are subway systems, service routes, abandoned mine shafts, and some that serve no purpose. I liked this because it was creepy, and although it did give you a hint as to what might be going on, it really didn't ruin the ending or the story for me. Sometimes when they do those big factoids at the beginning like that, they can really ruin it.
Yeah, well, sometimes they kind of overdo it in point. They accidentally give away important details that will be revealed as the film goes on. But basically what it does is plants an idea to get you thinking as the film moves on.
Yeah, I felt that because I sort of went into it having seen the trailer and knowing it had something to do with doppelgangers or stolen identities or something like that, which is what the trailers led me to believe the film was going to be about, the whole tunnel thing was really odd to me. So it almost, like you said, Abe, it made me think. It was very difficult for me to sit there at the beginning of the movie before I had even seen the first real visual and be like, oh, well, I understand what that connection is. I was sitting there going, oh my God, what the hell is the connection between these abandoned tunnels, which I'm very into abandoned places, so I've very well read about all these abandoned things underneath cities and stuff. What connection is this going to have to this story? And so that intrigued me further. As far as these subterranean tunnels are concerned, this is completely true. The fact that they told you was not even exaggerated, in case anybody's wondering. There are abandoned subway tunnels under New York City. I'm sure most people have heard of the entire city that is underneath Seattle, Washington. There's a whole city underneath it. But Dallas, Detroit, Chicago, Boston, let me see who else, Indianapolis, L.A., Louisville, Kentucky, I think Minneapolis, Eric, Philadelphia, Portland, Oregon, Salt Lake City, San Francisco, all of these cities and many more have abandoned worlds beneath them.
Well,
and in many cases, there are communities of people, usually the homeless, living down there. There was a book called The Urban Cave that came out a few years ago that chronicled the lives of a lot of homeless people that are living in an abandoned tunnel in New York City. I'm done talking. That's just what I wanted to
say. No, that's fine. Well, no, but there's two things that I felt when I thought about it after the film, which is one, that is very true under large metropolitan areas, but obviously my town, your town, Mike's town, you know, maybe not so much. But the second thing is I felt that was just there as a plot device to try to explain the underground village where these experiments bear.
Absolutely.
So I don't know if it was anything more than just a way to explain. In other words, if people said, how the hell could they do that? Oh, I explained it at the beginning by putting it as a message.
Right. But it's also no, true. And I do completely agree with you, Phil. You're absolutely right. But what I'm saying is that that was not even because of the way the movie was sold. It didn't ruin it for me. Instead, it just made me go, what the fuck is this going to have to do with anything? Which just made me want to go.
Beware of the chud.
Well, there's
that. Oh, yeah. I want to talk about that, too. But anyway, go ahead.
Oh, there's another thing that's really interesting as well is when you think of tunnels, and you also have to think back to the rabbits that they show a lot.
Yeah.
Tunnels, almost like a colony of rabbits.
The box here.
Yeah. And actually, Abe, I was going to talk about that a little later, too, when we get into the symbolism of the hair, which
No, it's not the botch hair. It's the white rabbit.
I'm not going to go into the whole, symbolism thing again. We've discussed it.
Start talking about Alice in Wonderland. We're dropping you from the call.
No, I'm not going to talk about Alice in Wonderland. I promise. But I'm also not going to go through an extensive discussion of the symbolism of the hare or the rabbit because I have done it before, like when we did The Witch and some other movies on this podcast, so I'm not going to go into that again.
Eric, say it. Say it.
She's a witch!
It's too long, dude. Too long. You're out of shape.
But moving on, I wanted to ask you guys, the opening scene... I liked the establishment of time because we see the old VHS tapes, and I was so mad that I didn't have my distance glasses because there were four videotapes on the shelf. One of them was Chud.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Nice.
And
one was Goonies.
That's the Underground
one
connection.
One was The Right Stuff.
I forget what the fourth one was.
I wonder what the fourth one was. Dark Discussions at AOL.com.
If only there was a resource that would have all the knowledge and the history of the world on it at our fingertips.
If only. I do like because of things like this, Christy, I definitely want to watch this movie again. I'm probably going to end up buying it on disc, especially if there's a commentary track. Just because I think he just like sprinkled stuff all over the place.
There's
no way I caught all of it on the first watch.
Yeah, and I'm sure like each of those VHSs was not only connected somehow, it foreshadowed what was going to happen in the movie. Like Goonies, okay, there's your underground connection. Chud, they came out of the sewers. The Right mm-hmm. Stuff, meaning that this family was going to have an inner strength in order to be able to beat this challenge or rise to this challenge. So there was the connection there. They also use a Rubik's Cube, which and all of these things not only establish that we're in the 1980s,
Oh, the TV.
The TV, right. The Hands Across America, which I remember that freaking ad. So I remember watching.
Oh, yeah, you too. Okay. First, I can one up you. I was actually part of that as part of a school trip.
Cool.
Honestly, it was very. I remember thinking at the time it was very anticlimactic, but you know, you just kind of held your hands for like 3 seconds and then you let go, and it was like that was it. But you know, in the end, we cured cancer or ended homelessness or something. So it was clearly worthwhile. the answer, by the way, to the missing movie is the Steve Martin, Kathleen Turner classic, The Man with Two Brains.
There you go. There's the duality piece.
He basically foreshadowed
everything the movie was about in showing us those four VHS titles.
All right. But
you knew what those movies were about.
All right, but okay, that's clever. But does it really matter? It's just clever.
Well, but wait, Phil. Yes, it's clever. But it does matter because here's why. I am always talking about how it doesn't matter if somebody really notices something like that or not. It's you as an artist put it in there to create a layer, another piece, so that if somebody does notice, it works to the single effect. That when I talk about single effect, it's that type of shit that I'm talking about, where he could have picked any four fucking VHSs, dude. He could have picked like freaking Star Wars whatever.
He was being clever.
He was being clever and adding another piece. What he was doing was what Poe, Edgar Allan Poe called the single effect, where everything that you put in the scene of your story or the scene of your movie subtly contributes to either the overall message or the theme or the plot, or it all kind of works together.
But
that sort of works with motif. It works with a lot of things.
But had he not done that, it doesn't change whether the film's good or not. So it's just clever.
No, it doesn't. But what I'm saying is it makes it better. It's just a detail.
Mm-hmm.
It's a detail that's more rich. That's what you want to do. That's what single effect is. It doesn't mean it would have sucked if he'd picked Star Wars and Superman and something that had nothing else. It's just another piece that sort of contributes to the whole, because it all of that, even if you don't notice it, it contributes to the collective unconscious, which means your brain kind of picks up on it even if you consciously don't notice it.
Right. It's sort of like, Phil, you're a gamer. We all know you love Far Cry 5.
The best game ever.
Yeah, possibly love it more than your children. But we've all played – well, you and I, we've played probably a number of shooter games over the years, right?
Yeah.
Oftentimes, it's the little things that make a big difference in a decent game and a great game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just sometimes small details, small textures, dialogue, or a feature that's not necessary for a game that involves you running around and shooting people. But it's little things that they put into it that add that extra layer that don't fundamentally change the games, but just make it a little bit richer. And if this was the only little thing he put in there, then it's a nice little Easter egg, you know, but it's that, I'm assuming, actually I'm pretty sure he's put lots of other stuff in there too, you know, that just give you more to look at. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right. I agree. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just that after seeing films like Hereditary and The Witch, and even films I like It Follows, it seems people or critics or our geek world just likes patting ourselves on the back, like, oh wow, that's cool, look, he did that, and oh, I saw it, and you know, and it's like, it's kind of cool, but it doesn't really matter that much. At least,
well, if people like it, then doesn't it?
It depends.
Well, and
it depends, like the type of view you are. If you're just my brother, he would say, I don't care, and I just like the film. But if it's a dork, or let me rephrase, a nerd who really gets into that stuff, then it's the greatest thing ever. So
yeah, and I like how you changed dork to nerd to be less offensive.
Yeah. And Jordan
you're
Peele,
a dork, Phil, whatever.
And J- Jordan Peele is a self-professed nerd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to do things like this to make it.
Oh, I'm not trying to say it's bad. I was just trying to say.
Well, then why are you bringing it up at all? I don't understand.
No, someone else brought it up. So I'm just putting another perspective, which is it's not a big deal.
Okay, so can I finish my original thought?
No.
Because I didn't get to finish. I like that they have the Rubik's Cube because it kind of represents the insolvable puzzle, the thing that's really hard to solve.
I didn't even catch the Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, the Rubik's Cube. And then we get to the carnival, and she has a Thriller t-shirt, and that also foreshadows the type of monster that we may encounter. So, again, it's foreshadowing.
Michael Jackson?
No,
yeah, exactly. that was fucking awesome.
Actually,
that's why I do this podcast with you guys.
Me and Mike are on the same wave.
You do the podcast after seven years, you hear us say Michael Jackson?
No, to say a funny one line.
No, that was really fucking funny. That was totally funny.
I think there's actually another thing to it, actually, because during that music video, another side to Michael Jackson's performance is revealed as a zombie.
That's what I was saying. Yep.
Duality, yeah.
So it's the duality there, and also the fact that when we get to one of the monologues that kind of tells us what's going on, one of the things that Red says is they made bodies, but they couldn't make souls. So there's a reference to zombies right there. Mm-hmm. But my point is that not only were all of these things contributing to the single effect, they establish us in the 80s very firmly. So they served a dual purpose. It wasn't – but then they still came on and said 1986, which kind of cracked me up just in case nobody got it. Like, right. I was like, oh, that's just in case everybody looked at this and thought, what the fuck does this have
to do? Well, I prefer just to know the specific year anyway.
I think it's smart to do, yeah, because
we know it's the 80s, but I want to, you know, is it 1989? Is it 1984? You know,
well, but in the Hands Across America, they do say what the date is, and
That's right, because I heard that too. So once they showed 1986 or whatever it was, I was kind of surprised because the commercial said it anyway.
Yeah, right. That's exactly it. But I understand why they did that, just to make sure that nobody missed it, and that's. That's right. Cool. Like, I get that. Sometimes you got to just make sure that people know where they are. But anyway, that was – so I'm going to shut up for a little while now and let you guys talk.
I got to wonder if, like, there are kids out there, like, saying, like, was that a real thing, the Hands Across America thing?
Oh, of course there are kids out there saying that because they weren't alive when it happened.
Yeah. And to be honest, I forgot about it because that was one of the –
I was part of it. I forgot about it.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really watch MTV at all ever.
But we ended racism.
So yeah, stuff like that. and poverty and all this other stuff.
Well, can I just say
hunger,
jumping
hunger,
ahead
cancer.
Really quick, one of the moments that
I
made
you
me laugh.
You said you're gonna let us talk.
I am, but I gotta throw this in there really fast, just because Mike said, "I wonder if there are kids wondering." I love that moment with the two kids where he goes, where the boy goes, "What's Microbots?" And the other girl goes, "What's Home Alone?"
Yeah, right. Micro Machines, yeah.
Great.
That was good. That was good.
Which obviously that makes him for most people, a neglectful parent.
Now, another thing that was really cool was just. The names of some of the tethered, you know, I thought there were some really interesting things because I think only because they do have some extra names in the cast, but they're never really said out loud. I think Chrissy had she found a list or something like that.
It's in the credits.
Well, I mean, in terms of what they mean and what the, you know,
I did.
You just like it because the other father's name is Abraham.
Abe.
Gotcha.
No, I
just to reference what you were saying, there is an article that someone wrote on Slate.com. It's called "What is the Significance of the Doppelganger Names in Us?"
Mm-hmm.
And it's written by Marissa Martinelli and Matthew Desham. So if you Google slate.com doppelganger names or something, it might pop up. It's excellent. It's somebody, I think it's honestly a little bit overthought, but whatever, it's still fascinating. And they literally take every single name of every character and every other, and they dissect it and show how it might connect to pop culture or the Bible or whatever. So it's a really cool article, and I encourage everybody to look it up.
Yeah. Well, and there's a wealth of material, companion material to go along with this movie. There's been already literally over a dozen articles written about this movie.
Well, yeah, and there'll be more to come as well. I mean,
yes,
there's probably more to say about it.
Well, and it's just interesting, all the different takes that are coming out. I think one of the most prominent ones is that, and this was partially what I took away from it on my first watch, is that Hands Across America was supposed to get rid of homelessness, but really didn't do all that much. It was just a grand gesture. And while the idea was nice, it didn't really do much. And part of the idea of having everybody underground and having a tethered is making a statement about society that there are the haves and the have-nots. Mm-hmm. And for everybody that's above ground having a nice life, there's somebody that's underground not having a nice life.
Well, Eric, some of the things that we read and I showed you were where the tethered represented those who were just wanted to take without working for it. And
Why I'm saying there's a lot of different interpretations.
And that's why, and that's why they were red, meaning like leftist or communist. So there was a lot of stuff that people said, and it's like they all make sense.
And it's true. It all makes sense if you look at it from that perspective, which is like I'm a little irritated with Jordan Peele right now because he's like, I explained Get Out. I'm not going to explain this one.
Yeah.
It's like, this one actually needs explaining, dude. The last one didn't.
Well, there's one thing I got from it in terms of the tethered and how they work was with the two halves of our main character showing that how environments can completely transform another person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the doppelganger half becomes almost seamlessly as another human being on the surface, even though parts of her tethered trait still kind of emerge from time to time. Well, Red completely loses humanity and just ushers in an entire rebellion with this kind of state of like mentality, and it's basically because of the environments they're trapped in. One gets a nice loving home and help, and the other is pretty much abandoned into a terrible desolate mine to eat raw meat in a dirty environment. It's kind of that thing with how certain criminals in certain environments are trapped in an area where they cannot find what they need and are forced to take desperate measures to whether rebel or survive.
Well, but that's circle back around to my original thought process here. I thought that interpretation of the haves and have-nots was fairly interesting, particularly when you look at some of the details of the movie about how when the main character goes down into the tunnels, there's an escalator going down, but there's none coming back up. So it's easy to fall down and end up in the tunnel, but it's not as easy to work your way back up, and things like that, which led me to lean towards that interpretation. I'm not saying it's definitively the interpretation. I'm saying it's the one I left with when I walked out of the theater.
Also, Eric, it's easier to fall down to that level than it is to go back up to a level of prosperity.
But as I said, the two halves of our main character, it shows it's not an impossibility. So I mean,
and then you get into, I'm sorry to cut you off, Abe. I'm just trying to finish this thought train. And then you get into the whole concept of, well, the ultimate resolution for the people underneath is to rise up and kill everybody up above. And is that the only solution? So it's kind of interesting that way. Sorry, I cut you off. Go back.
No, it's no problem. I agree with that. I also think it kind of shows that with the original doppelganger version was able to become normal human, it shows that it was not an impossibility. Red even highlights the very fact that things could be different if she had just come, if we went back to the surface together, mm-hmm. rather than trying to force each other into the back into the lowest pits, you know?
And perhaps that's the ultimate message, that maybe the people above should be trying to help the people below up. Otherwise, they'll have to
us. but also, it could be... that's true. That's true. But then you get the group who you could argue that they are intentionally that way. And then in other words, they don't see the humanity of those that they're killing either. So, Mike, you can say something.
I was going to say there's problems with a lot of these metaphors, especially on the political end. And this is what bugs me. And if you do have a film that has or any symbol that is so broad it can mean anything, then it has no meaning, right?
That's true.
And
yeah.
So here you have a film where my knee-jerk reaction is to assume that when a filmmaker in Hollywood makes a film with a seeming political message, they're probably coming at it from a leftward direction, right? And so
I think that's a fair assumption.
Right. I don't think that's an unfair assumption. It is it's not like it's being directed by, you know, John Voight. It was so I saw Red Uniforms. My first thought was that's class warfare, right? It literally, you know, above, below, and that it's a destructive thing. It's not a good thing, but then he seems to want to portray at the end a sympathetic view of the characters. And I start thinking, well, the red uniforms and, you know, that's clearly there, and right, haves, have nots, they're rising up. That's very, very, you know, Soviet of him, or Maoist or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, again, thinking about it, there's some other things that don't make any sense, that they were created to control the people, that they had no souls. Is that really the message you're trying to send to people down below?
That part of the movie is equally confusing.
Actually, I just wanted to say to you guys that, holy shit, that is fascinating. That you got all of that out of this, or that other people are getting all of that out of this. Because remember, I've read no criticism. I've read no reviews just for this reason. I didn't want to know what the intent was. I did not get any of that out of this movie at all. I thought, for me, this movie was really about, and again, nobody's wrong. This is like literary criticism. It's my dad always used to say, literary criticism is not wrong as long as you have enough shit to back up your thesis.
As long as you
have enough shit, nothing is wrong. Nobody can tell you you're wrong. So let's start with that.
From Here to Eternity is about Pac-Man, you're wrong. You know, there are certain
You've
cases.
You've got to have backup for it, and I think there is definitely backup for, like you said, the communist idea.
Well, what did you get out of it, Chris?
I thought this was a statement on the duality of human nature,
right.
In that social constructs can only protect us from ourselves for so long. But then eventually our hate and our evil side is going to come out. And I almost thought this was
suck.
I thought this was like a social commentary on things that have happened, like in social media, where in the real world, I would say, gee, Eric, let's sit down and have a discussion about this. But on social media, I don't know who you are. So I'm like, you're an asshole. And I turn into this primal, like, troll person. Like, I mean, there's a lot more to it about in terms of what I thought this movie was actually about. But in the end, what I came away with was, this is all about us fighting our primal natures, in that the inner hate, the, you know, hatred, racism, prejudice, bigotry, all of those things, murderous thoughts, jealousy, rage, you know, all of those things that are primal to us, we can only keep them at bay for so long before they overtake us eventually.
To add to that, Christy, that really shows up our main character in certain points when she's becoming enraged and violent. She's screaming, she's snarling. So her, and, you know, not only is her darker side coming in physical form in that of red, but even her darker side resurfacing as the movie continues on.
I guess, but I could just say that's just a normal reaction in a situation where you're being attacked and possibly killed.
But they have her deliberately snarling at one point. There are certain things they do, Phil, that actually push it more toward what Abe is saying that are not normal. Some things are, I agree. But then they did a couple that were not.
For example, when she's strangling Red at the end, she's actually giggling as she's doing it. She's actually enjoying killing Red.
That was sick, man. That was so messed up.
I didn't get to it, but I'm the more I've thought about it, and is the more I'm kind of leaning with Chrissy because, well, what are the scissors a metaphor for? What are the just the concept of the tethered? You know, of the idea that these are tied together and they are.
That was a pretty deliberate word choice on Jordan Peele's part.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And well, I don't know if he was thinking it in the same way that I was, but it's, or if I'm thinking, I should say, if I'm for the same reasons, but. And I couldn't help but think, you know, thanks to Phil yesterday of internet trolls, right? The idea that people go online, you know, and that's often their worst parts come out. And the person who is a complete dick on Facebook or Snapchat or 4chan, whatever, may be a perfectly normal human being outside of that, you know, that we do all have that. That sort of dark part that sometimes wants to come out. Mm-hmm. And it is kind of what's coming out. In some ways, that does control us. And that is sort of winning the argument. That is where we are now. And, you know, that is winning the day now. And certainly looking at some of Jordan Peele's history, some of that makes sense. And some of the response that he gets from, I'm sure he's gotten from internet trolls after he's been successful. And, you know, the comment he made the other day in the Hollywood Reporter, which covered an interview he did, you know, and the headline was, he's not going to make movies with white dudes in the leads. And people say, well, he's a racist. And it's like, well, no, that's, you're not understanding the context of what he said and why said it.
Well, I think the problem with the statement, though, Mike, wasn't the context. It was just saying it, because nowadays if you say anything like that, you're going to be immediately attacked by trolls. So no matter what your ethnicity is. So it's like, in other words, Wes Anderson has been attacked by Whoopi Goldberg because he doesn't have enough black dudes in his film. And it's like, people are just weird.
Well, it's weird. And somebody said, I think it was on the Exploding Heads Horror Podcast page on Facebook, naturally speaking about the worst aspects of people. And most people were, whether they agreed with what he was going to do or not, they weren't saying he was a racist. And, you know, the guy, Jordan Peele, is half white, half black. He was raised by his white mother. He has a white wife. And from everything I've seen, he adores them both. You know, I don't think he's against white people. His argument, his comment was basically that for years, and I got this right away, but people may not have if you don't know Hollywood history. People said you cannot put a black person in the lead of a film because it will die at the box office. Doesn't matter how many Eddie Murphys, Will Smiths, and Denzel Washingtons you had. If you put if it's a black lead, it won't do well. And that was the argument. Well, along comes Us, which features a black family prominently, does not have a prominent black star, right? Doesn't have Samuel L. Jackson in it. And it does phenomenal business. And he says, well, now that argument's dead. That's basically, and he didn't say, I will never do it. He said, I can't see a situation where I'm going to do a white dude. So he doesn't say he won't cast.
What's this have to do with the movie, though?
Well, let me get to that.
Okay.
But I'm saying it so people were twisting and arguing. But someone said, well, you can't say that. It's like, you could just do it. It's like, so it's okay if you do it, but you can't say what you're going to do?
That's how it is nowadays, Mike. You can't say things anymore, or you'll be destroyed.
You can't say things.
Right, so I can.
It's true. You can't say things, dude. You can't.
So I can kill you. I just can't say I'm going to kill you.
Exactly. You can't threaten violence about them. You just off them and whistle.
And that's stupid.
Dude, I remember when Mike Tyson said, "I'm going to eat his babies. I'm going to beat him up. I'm going to, you know," and people. Everybody knows what he was saying. He was just saying, you know, he's doing trash.
I'm going to win the fight. Yeah.
Yeah. But people said, oh my God, he's a terrible person because he says he's going to eat the man's babies. And it's like, people, you can't say things because people suck, Mike. All right. And
but
so
this
Jordan,
is part
Peele,
of it, right? this, but this is
Jordan
all...
Peele specifically stated this, whether or not he's trying to make a point, he stated it. And in the moment he states something like that, people will go nuts because people
and
suck.
And you're right, Phil, but it's the same thing. I don't think that Jordan Peele was trying to say I don't think there are good white actors. I don't think he was trying to say I hate white people. I think what he was trying to say is I plan on directing my own stories, and my own stories are from the black experience, so I don't see myself casting a white dude in the lead.
Right,
but
right.
He also
but technically that's where the double standard comes in, and then people flip out and all that. And so you just can't say things. You just can't.
Well, here's the thing. People are all upset about his statement and calling him a racist and everything, but it's not the same. And that's the thing. They're like, well, racism is racism. No. No, it's not. Because guess what? 200 years ago, white people owned black people.
Not all of them.
Not the same.
But
his point is, it's like you can only go through the history of horror. There's only a handful of films that have had a black family like you had in Us. And he didn't say, I'm only going to cast black people in the lead. He just said, not a white dude. So that basically, you know, opens it up to 80% of the global population. Phil, that is
Phil,
you're the one that posted the article, Phil.
But that has nothing to do with the movie that we're talking about.
It has to do with Jordan Peele, who directed the film. So yes, it does.
I prefer to move on.
So, but the point is that again, he said a thing and people jumped all over him for it, and it's the worst.
That's how it is, though, Mike. They jumped
right,
over
that's
Mike
it.
Tyson.
That's what it has to do with, and it has to do with. And that's what I think the best argument is: the idea that it's those worst parts of us, right? That are controlling.
But you also can't let yourself be a target either.
And what I was saying is, if you read the article, there's a great article, a great interview. It gives you a lot of information about him and his history and why he does the things he does, and insight into his.
Okay,
inspiration
for
the films he wants, but it's the trolls who end up controlling the conversation. Nobody was
always talking
about that.
They always do.
Right, yes. And so in this, again, I think there's other elements to it. I'm sure the have-nots is part of it. I think that metaphor is really doesn't work well because in the end, I think it fundamentally starts to collapse under the whole the fact that they don't have souls.
Well, and that's why I said that the movie starts.
But
to
they
collapse
don't
under
because they're
way.
Communists.
Well, but I did.
Because
but
they're communists.
I
that's,
did.
That's where it's a double meaning, Mike.
Yeah.
But I did want to comment on the soul thing. Mm. In particular, since, you know, we might as well just get the hair out of the way thing now, because I think it's connected to that. And then as far as the shears and the spiders that were present, too, I did want to talk about that. It's kind
well,
of all
well, together. Plus, that's just something the person said, because no one knows. First of all, no one knows if we have souls anyway. And even if you were religious and you were cloned, some people say, oh, there's souls. And
it's
some
his
say
story.
Not. Some
in
people
his
say
universe,
animals.
There are souls.
Yeah. So.
Now,
but these people, the tethers, say we don't have souls. But how do they know that?
Well,
okay,
I'm gonna step souls. In here, Phil, with a point of interest, which is that the person that delivered that line of them not having souls actually
has a soul.
One of the tethered.
No, the person that said it wasn't a tethered. It was actually the girl.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so she did have a soul, even though she said she didn't.
Well, this also comes back to some things about these shears, you know, how it's set brain connections to the other parts. They even have the handcuffs, too, about linking things together, you know, locking things together into a connection. But there's also one thing I was curious about was the strange gloves that the tethered wore.
Michael
Jackson. Yeah, I don't I haven't read a logical explanation on that yet.
Or one glove, Michael Jackson.
Well, it could have been intentional, or could have just been a prop.
I mean, getting into the idea of the shears. Okay. Well, first, we see three spiders in this, right? I'm going somewhere with this. Spiders play a role in this movie, and that when Adelaide is in the Vision Quest, she whistles the tune, the Itsy Bitsy Spider. And that tune is re-whistled a few times. So it has to – now, this just occurred to me this second with you guys talking about the haves and the have-nots and the climbing up the – you know, climbing up the escalator, and the escalator doesn't go up. It just goes down. That's interesting too, because the Itsy Bitsy Spider song is really about a spider trying to climb on a water spout, and the water keeps exploding and pushing him back down the spout. So there you could connect it to that idea if you wanted to. Thank you. However,
I hear that poem pretty much every day with my kids.
Yep. However, the Itsy Bitsy Spider, Adelaide also sees later when she's an adult, there's a spider crawling in front of a spider statue at the cabin. And spiders are connected to fate. Spiders are also considered a creative force in
that. Creepy as fuck.
Right, and that they weave the designs of life and fate. So that would make sense in the context of the film, because in a way, it's Adelaide that really kind of starts this whole thing, because she ends up seeing her own doppelganger by accident. So she's kind of the one that starts this whole apocalypse, really. However, the shears are also connected to this, because the tethered carry the shears, but it's a unique connection to the whole idea of cutting the cord.
Right. Yeah,
and right. Fate, yeah, that's what you said. Amy.
Because spiders
said.
Represent fate, right? Mm-hmm. So it's cutting the cord not only in an umbilical and maternal sense, but it is also a connection to the Greek myth of the fates.
Right.
The Moray, the three old women, and
because
that they're charged.
Yeah.
Right. They're charged with the destinies of all living beings, you know, heroes, heroines, whatever. And the destinies or the lives are represented by a string. And so the three fates were Clotho. I don't know how to pronounce the second one. I always used to mess that up when I was a kid. Lachesis, I think. Atropos is the third one, or Atropos.
And don't forget that the Norse gods have the same thing.
That's right, and so did the Romans too. There's a there's a few.
Erd, Verdandi, and Skald were the three in Norse mythology.
Oh, that's awesome! That's so cool. Yeah, I didn't know their names, but I knew that Norse and Roman mythology had it. Some people have gone so far as connect the idea of the three fates to the Holy Trinity in Christianity, which I think is very interesting. It's an interesting concept. I don't know that I totally agree with it personally, but it is interesting. But anyway, so that was kind of my connection. I connected the spiders, the shears, and the idea of fate with Adelaide specifically. And that's how I kind of got it. But I'm sure in these other interpretations of the film, you could make a case for the shears and the spider and the idea of fate meaning something completely different. And that's what I think makes this film so interesting, is that, like I said, like my dad used to say, as long as you can prove your shit, nobody can tell you you're wrong.
but even just the fact that they're called the tethered, right? Tethered implies a tie and a connection, and scissors break connections.
Right.
I mean, that was a pretty one of the more obvious things, right? I mean, calling them tethered, and then they're carrying... Right. Carrying,
well, and that's kind of why I thought a lot of
is pretty obvious, but I like Abe point too, which is, with the handcuffs, that one I didn't get.
Yeah, I totally did not catch the handcuffs. That's awesome. Like, I don't know why I didn't, but it's awesome.
And one thing I'd like to discuss with you guys is because I don't have a solid interpretation of this. Why did they replicate Hands Across America once they were up?
Okay, I have to agree with Eric, because I honestly could not figure that out either.
Yeah,
and I'm still thinking about it.
Oh, I know how this is what
wait,
I thought.
Wait.
And I'll tell you what I thought.
What was the question?
I thought
I'm going to repeat the question for Mike, and then you can answer, Phil, okay? My question was, why, once the Tethered were up top, did they replicate the Hands Across America?
And the reason I think so is because when the elites tell us to do something and everybody gets on board because they think, oh, I'm helping the world, I'm actually participating in something bigger than I am, they are basically just being zombies. Mm-hmm. And the Tethered are zombies.
Okay.
So that's what I got out of it. Because,
well, what's
like,
the point from the storyteller's point of view? Why are they doing it? Right? Not a logical reason.
The storyteller is that basically we're all followers of a greater being, which is someone telling us, oh, help, you do this because it makes the world better, and it may not.
Well, we're all sheep.
We're all
sheep. The shears.
We're all sheep because it's really just a marketing campaign by some few wealthy people. Let me just finish my point. And then all these people come and they do it. And as you said, Mike, it was 3 seconds and nothing happened and there was no cures and nothing. But I'm sure some good happened, but, you know, nothing of huge significance as they try to portray it as. And then these people who come out of the sewers and whatever, and they're just sheep. That's, you know, they're just followers. They're just zombies. And that's why they do it. Why?
Add to that what you said, the greater being. Red's motivation was more of like a religious crusade. Keep in mind, one of the things that keeps popping up was Jeremiah 11:11.
Yeah, but that it wasn't, because that was just a meaning for one of the ideas, it wasn't a religious crusade. It was more like a rebellion.
Well, that's what I'm saying is, Red says during the last conversation that she thought her purpose was a mission from God. She thought she had a mission from God to lead the Tethered against those on the surface. And the Jeremiah 11:11 says that this is what the Lord says: I will bring on them a disaster they cannot escape. Although they cry out to me, I will not listen to them. It's a abusion, and their hands connected together is their defiance and their belief in the accomplished mission.
Hmm. All right, that's true. I also think that. Well, anything, whether it's politics, whether it's religion, whether it's any form of grouping, people use that to make things happen, and a lot of times they try to make things happen in a bad way, and so that makes sense, Abe, that she could have distorted a religion, and Peel was trying to state. That was one of the things.
Keep in mind, the Tethered were just literally going through a loop constantly until she arrived. Until she arrived, she broke a cycle and created a change that shook not just the lives of the Tethered, but the entire country.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and that's the thing, is that, like, if you look at the family, right, they all seem generally happy. Obviously, the mother, she was a little more quiet and shy and oddly and so forth. So, you know, when she was hanging out with her husband's friends, she was more reserved. And originally I thought that may have been her being like, you know, these are all phony people and why am I here and whatever. But then by the end of the film, you look at it and go, oh, the reason she's acting weird is because she's actually one of the Tethered.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I thought it was interesting because it gives it a double meaning now. It's not, oh, it's not her rebelling against the phoniness of all these bourgeois people. It's actually she's one of the Tethered, and she didn't even know it.
I was just going to say, Christy, before you go, that I didn't catch it on watching the movie, but looking back, it's tipped fairly early that she's actually one of the Tethered.
Explain her.
When? Yeah, explain that.
When they're talking about when after she meets her other in the Hall of Mirrors, they have that flashback to her standing outside while her parents were talking and saying, she won't talk, we just want our daughter back. Right there, if you were really on the ball, you could catch that as a hint that she's actually one of the Tethered.
Right, because it's not their daughter, and they know it.
Yeah.
Right, right. Interesting. Good catch, Eric. Nice. Nice.
So, getting back to the Hands Across America,
mm-hmm.
I just took it as a, right, as them, whatever you think the Tethered represent, as characters in the film, they were wanting to be seen, to be heard. They came out from underground.
Okay.
You know, and it's hard to be swept under the rug and not notice when you've literally made a link across the United States. Okay. And it's a symbolic gesture on their behalf. And, you know, she, what's her name again? Red, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or the new Red. That was one, that would be one of her last memories before she got trapped in the underground.
Right. Yep.
That's true, yeah.
And she was wearing a Hands Across America shirt.
And she was wearing a Hands Across America, wait, well, under the Thriller shirt.
Yeah.
No, right, before they won the shirt.
Yeah, the but shirt. The Tethered yeah. took the Thriller shirt.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
What were we talking about? Because now I forgot. Oh, I did want to mention, just getting back on a little bit of a lighter note, some of the fun pop culture references he did here,
because mm-hmm.
There was one I specifically noticed that just literally made me laugh out loud that nobody in the audience, the rest of the audience, even understood it. I know this for a fact because everybody was quiet except for me. The kid, Jason, her son, mm-hmm. she's there with the, you know, the obnoxious friends of the husband.
Yeah.
And which also brings up a point that to support my idea that one of the things that this movie could be about is the duality of self, because each of the Tethers was sort of the opposite of the way that the surface people were. Like the white wife, the obnoxious friend's wife, she was very, very talky, 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 talky. And then when she was a Tethered, she didn't say a word. She
well, none of the Tethered could talk.
Yeah, none of the Tethered really talked.
And Red was
just the one.
Well, Red,
she wasn't really Tethered.
Yeah, she was.
Yes,
human.
She was. She was the mom.
She wasn't mm-hmm. Tethered.
Yes, she was.
No, she
Mike,
was
what are you talking about?
She was actually the little girl. She got kidnapped.
Right, and the little girl was she underground, could, and the Tethered was above ground, and she
yes.
could talk.
Oh, I see. Yes. Good point.
Oh, okay. God. I guess we're doing okay.
Well done, Mike. I gotta give you tips here.
Okay, so getting back to this, so there's a moment where Adelaide, who is the mom, is sitting there and she is listening to the blonde white mom, I forget her name,
right.
prattle on,
mm-hmm.
and they're sitting on a beach under the umbrellas, and the Adelaide just sort of fades out. Everything gets very fadey and echoey around her.
Yep.
And they do some interesting things with sort of close up and pulling out focuses of other people running around on the beach.
Jaws.
And guess what it was? It was Jaws. Oh, yep. And then the kid shows up and he's wearing a Jaws t-shirt. But here's what's also really interesting about that. They focus on a white Mike Brody with a white Ellen massaging his shoulders in that scene from Jaws. And there is the woman from the hotel talking to her, who I believe is black, I think. Isn't she?
What hotel?
The motel. She runs the motel in Jaws.
I
just
don't
noticed
remember.
The juxtaposition, and I was like, that's really totally interesting. Or you could go dark-haired, blonde-haired, whatever. But again, it also ties into that idea of opposites
and
duality.
In that same beach scene, he walks up to that dude that's standing there with his hands out. And I didn't put this together while I was watching the movie. I saw it on one of the things I was looking at online. That might be the first dude that came up to form the Hands Across America chain.
Yes,
he's standing there waiting for somebody to hold his hand.
Who was he? Right.
Yes. Well, because he came
except
out,
that he was a homeless guy.
Yeah, well, yeah, because earlier when the family's going to the beach, they see a body being put into the back of an ambulance that with stab holes.
And that was the homeless guy with the Jeremiah 11:11 sign.
Yeah.
But then he's standing there with his hands out. It's the Tethered.
It must be the other one. Yeah. Exactly.
Yep.
And well, did you get the Lost Boys joke?
No.
She says they're going. We're wanting to go over there. I heard they're looking for extras. They're filming a movie.
Oh.
And this is in Santa Cruz.
Oh,
which,
right.
Which
that's
was
right.
Used.
That was 1980s. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, wow. Lost Boys came out in 1987.
Wow.
Also, you know what? I like that thing about the homeless guy being the beginning of the chain, because again, we're on the Pacific Ocean, literally right on the Pacific Ocean, and that's the beginning of the chain. Mm-hmm. And he is the beginning of the chain.
Well, as East Coast people, I prefer to think that they were the end of the chain.
Well, either when I say beginning, I mean either side's a beginning. It doesn't matter which.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, but we're better.
Well, I did.
I would agree with that statement. I would agree with that.
Since Jeremiah 11:11 has already been mentioned and it came up, thank you, Abe. I did also want to talk about specifically the number 11, because the number 11 is also a 3-beat in this movie. But the use of 11 is interesting, not only because it's a pair of ones, so again, it ties into the whole duality and the whole idea of reflections, and especially our darker reflections. But in numerology, the number 11 is about your power becoming more spiritual. That is, you are beginning to better understand yourself as well as the world around you. Conversely, 11 can also symbolize chaos and judgment, and it frequently does in the Bible, I believe. Although this, I think, is mostly, like I said, in a biblical context. I just wanted to point that out because I thought the use specifically of 11 is – and 11 is also considered something called a master number, which means it's like, I don't know, the ultimate or something. I'm not really well-versed on my numerology. I did have to look this up.
But
I thought it was kind of fascinating.
And Mike would appreciate this because it is opening day in baseball as we're recording this, not including the games that happen in Japan. But the movie, The Natural, which is filled with symbolism, one of the things when he becomes a major leaguer, Roy Hobbs, he goes to the back room to, you know, to get a uniform, and they said, what number do you want? And there's, you know, the few up there, and he goes, I'll take 11. And the guy behind the thing says, no, you don't want to take 11. That's a bad luck number. You don't want to be 11. How about number 9? He goes, yeah, all right, number 9. So
wow, that's cool.
Yeah, and I always wondered why, because I always liked the number 11 for some reason. And then that movie came out. It's like, oh, that's weird. And I never did research on it, but it obviously had some symbolism of importance. And that movie's loaded with stuff like that it must mean something. And a bad luck number, at least in that movie. So,
yeah. So I was just looking at something about the rabbits, and apparently Jordan Peele just finds them creepy.
That's it, really? Huh.
That's a big part of it, I guess. He goes into more detail, but he also described their ears as like scissor ears.
Oh, huh, interesting.
Okay.
And now maybe this is pushing it far, and maybe I'm full of shit here. But you can even like almost visually, an 11 is almost like the two blades and the scissor. But
oh no, yeah. Yeah, totally. That totally works. I mean,
but now I'm looking for patterns that may be getting imposed.
But this goes back to the idea of this sort of thing being subjective, and how if we were to look at a film as a book, right, as a great literary novel, and each of our assignments was, okay, each of us has to sit down and write a thesis about what the movie Us is really about. You could totally use the fact that, you know, the ears, you know, if you were going to write about the Shears and say, okay, I think this movie is really about the idea of the fates and cutting the cord, and that our destinies are our destinies and they cannot be changed. Now, I think that's one thing that's going on in this movie among many, but let's say that that's the one that you chose to write about, Mike. You could then turn around and use, hey, the rabbit's ears look like the shears on a pair of scissors, and which looks like the 11, which ties it to, you know, whatever. Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, as long as you have enough support, as long as you, the main rule is as long as you have three major things to support it, you can pretty much come up with whatever you want, as long as you have at least three. But the more, the better. You
well,
and, want
and
between
that's,
five and
that,
ten.
That's the thing. You know, Doc discusses, we talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. I mean, I remember, like, when Friday the 13th came out back in 1980 or 81 or whatever it was, and, you know, a lot of people said, oh, it's just misogynist rubbish, or it's turning our kids to hell, and, you know, it's violent, it's crap, it's blah, blah, blah. And then you could actually now, you know, 30 years later, 40 years later, say, write a piece on it, and you're going to have people pull things and find things in it that are so important, and rightfully so, that yeah. are symbolic to the movie itself and society and life at that time and how it relates to today and whatnot. So technically, everything is subjective, even if it's quote-unquote trash, because when you think about it, nothing – a lot of these films that we were considered trash in the past are really not trash. And really what us demonstrates today with things like Mike finding, you know, the number 11 is possibly an analogy of scissors, shows yep. that we've come a far along in genre film, where back in the day, this film could have been considered like Friday the 13th when it first came out as rubbish. And now it's considered something of importance, and you can write thesis and things on horror films, even ones from 40 years ago that people laughed at, which is interesting, I thought.
Right, and what was the son's name?
Jason.
His name was Jason?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he ran around with a mask on?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they did point that out. And they also, in that article that I referenced earlier that talks about the symbolism of the names, they did specifically mention that. Mm-hmm. They also mentioned that it may have a connection to Jason and the Argonauts.
Oh yeah.
Because he is symbolically through the movie. I can't remember what the guy said, but it was an interesting article. You'd have to go read it, where he talks about how as far as an archetype, the son Jason kind of becomes like the Jason of Jason and the Argonauts. And then he had a whole bunch of supporting evidence for that. So, I mean, that's what makes this stuff interesting, is because there is no wrong answer and there's so much to mine here. I mean, we can easily talk for 25 hours
also,
about all the crap in this film.
Also about duality. The tethered Jason will even though he's quote unquote evil, he will do whatever the good Jason does. So when
right.
Jason and you know, so they are like images.
That's part of the tethering concept.
Exactly. So that, and they were, that shows that it is a duality where one is the dark side of the good side, and then so on and so forth. So
what's very interesting is that connection was only evident with them, that, you know, where Jason had effect in his actions on Pluto, while the other tether went in opposite ways. You know, they never mimicked each other in any way.
Well, and I just gotta, while we're talking about that kid, I particularly enjoyed his performance, because the tethered version, the way he was moving and growling, was really fucking scary.
It was really
scary. I liked it.
Yeah.
One of the things I really did love was the very first introduction of of Red and the other tether family, was just how they all come into the living room, and it's a great introduction of seeing each side face the other.
Mm-hmm. And to go back to Jason and his double. And Mike's point that obviously it's a reference to Friday the 13th. Jason was deformed for some reason in Friday the 13th, and so when mm-hmm. he takes the mask off, there's the mm-hmm. deformity. So makes it
but
more legit.
I really did feel like, and another thing too is how the physicalities of the characters really showed the difference. Like, for example, the daughter, for example, was not really into track anymore, but her tether version was extremely fast and agile. Gabe was a little more of, you know, he tries to be this very cool physically imposing fella. But his opposite, Abraham, is a giant. This shows the complete opposite, not just the personalities, but physicality.
And it's interesting because they're also more but less at the same time.
Exactly. There's each part is missing something from the other.
Yep. No, I agree. Any other items that we want to bring up that we haven't talked about yet?
I just want to say that one of my favorite moments in the movie, a couple, actually. First of all, I laughed uproariously when she tried to use the voice command to call the police and it started playing Fuck the Police.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I was dying.
God. That was so hilarious. that was freaking awesome. Awesome.
I also love the part when they are trying to get to the car and they're comparing body counts to see who gets it.
Oh, that was great, too. I got two.
And possibly my favorite moment of the movie was actually Elizabeth Moss in the bedroom when she's in the mirror, like silently making expressions as like she's practicing being human.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, there was a lot of really great unsettling stuff like that. That was just profoundly disturbing. To talk about us as the monsters a little bit, because I said this movie, these monsters to me really scared the crap out of me. And I think part of the reason they scared the crap out of me, I was explaining it to someone at work, because it's like when you meet someone and you just know that something is really not right. Something is off, but it's off in a dangerous way, if that makes sense. I am not talking about a mental handicap or a physical handicap or anything like that. I'm talking about when you meet someone and you just get the freaking creeps. You're like, something is really not right with that person. There's something that's just creepy and wrong. And that's the way that I feel these monsters, the tethered, were presented. They were almost presented as people that you might see every day that look normal, but something is kind of off, and in a very sinister way. And I also appreciated the fact that the way that Red talked, oh my God, shivers up my freaking spine.
Yeah, that voice was something else.
That voice was horrible. Oh my God, I am still hearing that in my head in bed at night. It was just spine chilling. I thought it was amazing.
Yeah. And I think what's really clever about it too is that there's actually a character reason for her voice looking like that, considering she lost it during her encounter in the past.
Right. Yep. I mean, it was little things like that that I thought made this so scary and so brilliant. And another creepy scene, I got to tell you guys, oh my God, when we see the world of the below, the world of the tethered, and they're all mimicking what the people are doing up top.
Well, and see, that's the reason why this was a lot of...
Oh my God!
But this is a lot why the movie's really more an allegory than anything else, because, you know, how would they be able to, or why would they be doing or know?
Yeah, when you start to think about that whole underground society, it starts to fall apart if you're in the real world,
right? Yeah,
because where did they get all their identical jumpsuits if they were abandoned? And all that.
What's with the gloves? You know, why the red jumpsuits?
How do they know to pretend they're eating Chinese food at the same time someone is actually doing that?
Actual things, if you want to think of real world terms, like, you know, how are the tether immune to disease? You know, because they're in a shitty environment, how they're not getting sick and stuff like that.
That's true,
well,
too.
But see,
yeah.
This is kind of why I said initially there are things that are not explained in this movie like that. but I didn't necessarily feel I needed that explained to me. I was sort of like, this is a story that has a larger point. It's fascinating. It's interesting. You know what? I don't really give a shit if this is totally possible or not. This is just a really fucking cool idea. And there's also a supernatural piece to it, right? So I was kind of like, you know, anything could be possible if you are working, especially if you're working within the legend of the German doppelganger. I mean, the whole idea of the doppelganger.
Well, that's when it turned supernatural, was the last like 20 minutes. Prior to that, it really wasn't necessarily supernatural. It was it was supernatural in the sense that you have clones that you didn't know, but it felt like it was a government experiment as they
suddenly changes
to supernatural at the very end. And that makes it allegorical, especially with the rabbits just walking around the halls and stuff. It was just interesting.
We were talking about, I mentioned the German legend of the doppelganger, and the word itself means double walker. But the doppelganger, according to legend, is a person who can look like you, sound like you, copy your mannerisms, but it's not a twin. It's actually a supernatural being.
Right, but the movie had implied before it wasn't supernatural that it was a government experiment.
Also, how many movies, now guys, we've all seen so many movies, how many movies have we all seen with government experiments that honestly don't make any sense in the real world if they were real? They just don't. I mean, look at shit like
that's a lot of them.
Look at the Final Countdown.
I understand where you're going, Chrissy, but I don't think you're going to be able to convince at least me that it was not a flaw in the film.
Right. But I mean, saying, do you really care? I mean, they just didn't even have to say the
government. Honestly, for me, it bothered me. Yes.
It can bother you, Phil. That's fine. I don't think that makes it a flaw. I think it makes it something that bothers you.
Okay.
Yeah, Here's the thing.
Yeah, I'm not trying. Yeah, it's just something because it didn't fit with the rest of the movie, is all I'm saying.
Right. Here's,
go on, Mike.
I just think the mistake they made there, honestly, was mentioning that it was a government thing. Did they actually say that?
Yes.
It's strongly implied that there.
She specifically stated it.
So, okay. And the word doppelganger has never been used. I don't think it was used at all in the movie. It was been used by critics. Also, so it's not something that was actually stated in the movie that is doppelgangers. So,
well, no, but
like you're going to say,
but Phil, it is the legend of the doppelganger. It doesn't matter if that word is used in the movie or not. That is what it is. Like, there is no denying that. He took the idea of the doppelganger and fucked with it. That if you know the legend at all...
I understand all that. I'm just saying it didn't fit with the government experiment part at the beginning. And that's all I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying. That's why they never should have said that it was a government experiment. They just said they hated us and left it. If they had left it at that and never said who they was, it would have been better. Anyway,
right.
Go ahead.
It's the whole idea of I've mentioned many, many, many times on the podcast that if you buy the premise, you buy the bit. Well, the premise up front is the creepy things living in the shadows.
Yeah,
that's the premise up front. The premise up front is not government experiment that led them linked. And to me, since it's not part of the premise that you have to buy to buy into the film, It's asking us to take that little bit extra stretch of credibility, for lack of a better term, that we weren't willing to buy into in the beginning.
Mike, I'm curious about something.
Right.
Did Pam see this movie with you?
Yes.
I imagine she didn't like it much because of the ending. Is that the case?
She liked it. I don't think she... We have not seen each other much other than... right before this podcast, for the last couple of days. So we haven't really had a chance to talk about it. And if I remember correctly, she was kind of, you know, I think I'm trying to, I don't know if I'm reading into what I was thinking after the movie or what she said, but she liked the film, but wasn't really sure what it was saying or what it meant. If I remember correctly.
I actually think that they have to go back to the other point, have to go with the government experiment, Chrissy, because I think that's part of what he was trying to, part of the message he was trying to say, where the government screwed over these, quote unquote, screwed over these people, or actually made these people. Mm-hmm. And then these people rebel against, you know, they're left to on their own and they're not doing well and whatever. And then they go up and rebel like, you know, a fascist or a communist revolution. And in this case, probably communist because of the red suits, if you want to go that way. And then they come up and then they overthrow everybody and stuff. And so I think that's one reason he's put that in there, even if he may have, if you think he may have been trying to do another thing, which is doing the supernatural. But I think he was really more going for the non-supernatural, because I think he had a lot of allegories and points to make about politics, religion, as Abe brought up, and various other things. But then again, he could have been trying to go both, and maybe you just can't go do both together, well, because you had the thing too, Chrissy, which is the duality of people, and that would be the doppelganger thing. So maybe it was intentional to be have both in there. The question is, does it work? And it depends on the viewer, I guess.
Well, and yeah. Again, it depends on the viewer, but it also depends on – it's like that interview that Robert Frost gave one time where somebody asked him and said, what the hell does stopping by woods on a snowy evening really mean? What does Stopping by Woods, the poem by Robert Frost, really mean?
From Londonderry, New Hampshire. Yeah, Derry, New Hampshire.
He said it means what it means. It means whatever you think it means. And so unless a director or an artist or a writer specifically comes out and says, and this is the rule I've always followed. Again, I learned this from my dad. He said, unless an artist specifically comes out and said, this is what I specifically meant to do and it means this, mm-hmm. He said, then it's all up to your viewer or your reader or whoever. Right. Or
But as me and Mike have said, that's what
good art is.
Even that isn't necessarily true, though, too, because
that's correct.
As Mike and me have mentioned in the past, once it goes into the public domain, people can read anything they want into it. And so even if the artist says it means this, it may, but other people can say, oh yeah, but look at this. Mm-hmm. Even
and
if you intend it.
And the vast majority of artists don't work completely on an intellectual level.
Right.
Right. So there can be things that they're processing and they're thinking. A lot of times that is what art is about, is working through things, through your own feelings, your own emotions. And so you may put things into it, not necessarily realizing everything that you have put in there. And, you know, and so sometimes, and then you don't realize it maybe until later. Oh, I thought I was doing this, but I also had this in there. I didn't realize that this could be seen as mm-hmm. a symbol of that. And this isn't to say that they're wrong, you know, when they're doing it bluntly. And quite frankly, the least interesting art is the art where they're, where they have to say, this is what it means, and that's the only thing it can mean.
Mm-hmm.
That's just turns into a polemic, or just turns into, you know, a thinly veiled message, you know.
And to that point, I kind of give Peele credit for not directly answering any of the questions around this movie. But at the same time, I'm really interested in his intended message, and I would like to hear it. So I really hope he has a commentary track.
Did he do a commentary for Get Out?
I think he did. And he had all sorts of shit in that movie that was absolutely intentional.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Because as we know, a lot of these mainstream films don't put anything on disc anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, he's a nerd, so I imagine he's going to be putting that stuff on there. And again, he's a guy that I think, like with Get Out, he's got a complicated background, you know, because he is, it isn't just, you know, whatever, but white people bad, or black people have it hard in America, you know, because he's a black guy who has it pretty good in America. He was a black guy.
He's half black.
Right. He's a half black. I was saying he was a black kid growing up who got shit because he talked white. He married a wife. So he sees different, he's going to see race through a somewhat different lens. And so people that try to oversimplify, and I should say a more complicated lens than most of us. So, right, that tried to oversimplify the message of Get Out, probably missed a lot of the nuance in that film. And I think people who are looking for an easy answer are missing it. I do think that when you can interpret a film to mean exactly the opposite thing and find just as much evidence to support it, then it maybe is not as well crafted as it could have been, or maybe you're missing something where that maybe is going to be more clarifying. What I will say is, at the very least, you got people talking about it.
Right.
And people are talking about issues and people are talking about what it means. And I have to give them credit for that.
Yeah.
Well, and also, it's a good way to work messages in if that's your goal, because right now, as we see in theaters, especially if they get good reviews, horror films are the thing. They're the big thing right now in theaters.
Well, and genre films have always been a place to express ideas through a work of art that isn't just about that idea. If you watch it's available on Shudder right now, Eli Roth's History of Horror. They speak to that a little bit about how, if you want to make a movie about McCarthyism, how many people are going to go see a documentary about McCarthyism? Not that many. But if you make Invasion of the Body Snatchers and bury it in there where people can see it, but it's also an entertaining piece of horror / science fiction, a lot more people are going to get it in front of them. So that's just always been an advantage of genre films, in that filmmakers can express ideas if they choose to, while still making an entertaining piece of art.
Right. Yeah. And I don't think we're in the position anymore so much that we used to be, where Rod Serling did The Twilight Zone because you couldn't tell certain stories on TV. You were not allowed to tell certain stories. And so by couching it in science fiction terms, you could tell a story about race or things that maybe, if it was done in a real world setting,
boundaries can be crossed and explored.
Right. But now those limits aren't there anymore, really. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So what it does allow you to do is, I think, recontextualize it. It allows you to strip away some of the baggage.
Right.
That a contemporary issue would have, that if it was a story about, if it was a story about two real Americans arguing over whether or not to build a wall, then we already have preconceived notions going into the film, or many people will, and they're immediately going to take one side or the other. So you strip it away from the actual setting and recontextualize it into a different one, and people can maybe come in not realizing that's what the film is about, and they could see it from a different angle that they, with their guard lowered. So it allows it to go in a different way. And it also maybe can allow you to tell it in a way that is more entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
You all know that when the wall comes down, the ice walkers come down. And
the others.
Depending
if you read the book or not.
The misunderstood.
The misunderstood.
I think that I completely agree with you. I think genre has always been a stronger place to be able to say just about anything and in an entertaining way. And it also has an even more unique power than that, in that it can also work on a level that is not – like I always talk about the collective unconscious. Some of these things work on a level that is actually that people aren't conscious of. So the message gets there even if it's not beating you over the head with it. And that's where things like symbol and motif come in, because your brain does register things that maybe you consciously don't. And that's why genre is so important. And I think we are getting to a point where I was just recently asked in an interview because I have a new book coming out. And one of the questions was something to the effect of why it was something. It was like much. It was very well eloquently worded, but it was eloquently worded. But it was basically like horror has always been looked on as, you know, shit or, you know, pretty much. What do you think we can do to change that perception? And one of the things I said in response to that was this is already happening. It's just that people have to learn how to look deeper into it. But then there is also responsibility on the people who create horror to make sure that they're not just turning out, you know, junk that says nothing. And there's nothing wrong with junk that says nothing. Don't get me wrong. Junk that says nothing is awesome, too. We all love that. I mean, not everything has to mean something. And sometimes I just want to...
Deep Blue Sea.
Deep Blue Sea. Sometimes a bag of M&Ms is a freaking bag of M&Ms, and all I want is a bag of M&Ms, and that's okay. But I think in order for a genre like horror to be able to come up the ranks a little bit, it does need to have a refresh of some important films. You know, in the past, we did have the Stepford Wives. In the past, we did, you know, we've always kind of had this. But I think we're getting a glut of it now. I think there's a lot more of it now.
I think.
And no, I'm not going to use the term elevated horror because you know how that pisses me off.
Yeah. I think it's so much interesting, and not everyone. Some people struggle just to get something written that's semi-literate. Not everyone can pick up the baton and make, and I hate the phrase, important stuff. Importance is established 30 years down the road. It is not established now. And I see people saying, Peele is the new Hitchcock. First of all, that's an unfair thing to put on anybody.
That's what they said about Chalamet, for Christ's sake.
Right, he was the new Spielberg, right? No, that's an unfair thing. And you see that, you know, Phil is a baseball fan.
It's scarier than The Exorcist.
Hyperbole.
Let him be the baseball reference.
Was that when they say, oh, this is the next Mickey Mantle, their next Ted Williams, or whatever? It's no. Let them be the first of whoever they are. Let Jordan Peele be Jordan Peele. And don't tell me how important Get Out is. Don't tell me how important Us is. Because we'll know if it's important if people are still talking about it in 30 years. Because I promise you.
Right. Because like Friday the 13th is obviously important. Last House on the Left, Night of the Living Dead, because 40, 50 years later, they're still being talked about.
Right. And here we are, you know, 80 years after, the creation of talkie films and color films. And
95
years, sorry. Is it?
Because end of World War II was 84 years ago, and that was 1945.
Oh, right. So, but kids today don't know who Edward G. Robinson is. Kids today don't know who Clark Gable is, but they sure as hell know who Dracula is. But they know who Dracula is, and they know who Frankenstein is, right?
Right.
You know, so what ends up sustaining and being relevant over time is debatable. But what it's interesting is that with a film like Us, the fact that everybody knows it's a Jordan Peele film means people approached it differently because of Get Out, right? If this was, I don't know, an Eli Roth film, they may not go into it expecting it to say something.
Right.
Eli Roth rules.
But here, they're going into it expecting it to say something. And Jordan Peele, in fairness, is out there telling people he's trying to say something. But when Eli Roth was saying he was trying to tell people it was saying something, nobody wanted to listen to him.
He still rules. His movies are the best.
So, it's an interesting two-way street. Where here it's a case of your viewing is informed by knowing who made it, which in theory you shouldn't really let affect you.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, you should be able to view it context neutral and just know nothing about it ahead of time.
Well, there's a problem. There's a problem with that.
Guns,
in the sense that you know, some people like, oh, it's a Scorsese film. I can't wait to see it. So you're going to have a bias going in anyway. So,
oh, right. It immediately does it. But knowing it's a such and such film, first of all, would prejudice you to be more or less likely to like a film. It will frame your expectations of it. But it will also, and it frames how you're going to look at it. And we're going to, and we go into this looking immediately for, oh, we're going to have a good podcast discussion about this because it's the next film by Jordan Peele, the guy who made Get Out. And whether you like the film or not, there was a ton of stuff to talk about in that film. And now that expectation is going to be there with him for whatever he does. Just like at some point, Rod Serling was not able to, he would never be able to tell like a simple children's story that didn't have some meaning because it was expected of him.
All right, let's wrap this up.
Yeah. Sounds good. All right. So
final thoughts.
Before we get our final thoughts, Eric, you do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Ascanty Podcast. That's spelled A-S-K-A-N-C-I-T-Y. You can find it on Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes, and Spotify.
And Eric, what's this new podcast that me, you, and Mike are doing?
Well, it's not a new podcast, but it's coming back for the first time in quite a bit because it's about a television show that's been off the air for a while. It's our Game of Thrones podcast called You Know Nothing, Jon Snow. Last night we recorded our just kind of a review of season 7, just to kind of remind people we're around and renew our thoughts on that. Getting ready for season 8 coming up in April.
And our forecasts, our forecasts and predictions.
Yes.
Yes, that's right. We did that. All that good stuff.
Just over just how crazy is Daenerys Targaryen.
That's true.
And
that's,
just how evil
there,
is
there was more than one disagreement.
That's true.
Oh, it was.
That's
I think true. It was one disagreement carrying through the entire 98-hour podcast.
Jesus.
Possible, yeah. Yeah, that was a good discussion. Also, Mike, you do another podcast with me, and then we do another one with Eric that is on hiatus, and you do a blog, too?
Yeah, the blog is on Natural Selections. The movie on the one on hiatus is Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, which is a Westworld podcast that will eventually return when the third season comes back, but that show has only been on hiatus for about a year now, and HBO seems to be wanting to stretch things out even longer. So I wouldn't expect anything until maybe this fall or next spring. So that's that. And at the moment, we're doing Searching for American Gods, which is about to air its fourth episode of its second season. And you can tune in for now and hear our thoughts on that.
That's right. And it's about the Starz television show, American Gods.
American Gods, yes.
Yeah. Chrissy, do you actually have a new book that's coming out? What's this all about?
I do. I have a new book coming out. It is called The Shadows Behind. It contains several short stories. Some of them are long out-of-print favorites. There's a couple of them that are available in a couple of anthologies. But then there's a bunch of brand-new work that no one has seen or read yet. So that is going to be released April 30th. I have not talked about my four team members here. I haven't discussed this with my four team members yet, but I would like to do some kind of giveaway on the show. So stay tuned, and you can find out more about me at ChristyPetersonSchoonover.com.
And Abe, if people forget all this stuff, what can they do on DarkDiscussions.com?
You can look here right hand side. There'll be a link to all those goodies right there. The blogs, the podcasts, and also, there's some also some articles you may want to check out as well. So just visit darkdiscussions.com, and you'll find everything you need right there.
That's right. And please email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com about anything genre-related, whether it's about the movie Us or about the movie Braid or about Game of Thrones or about American Gods. Email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com, and we will read your message on our podcast.
What, one of those things was not like the others.
Two movies and two TV shows.
Phil, we haven't seen Braid yet.
Oh, one of them we haven't talked about yet. Yes, we haven't talked about it yet, but it could be an upcoming episode, so stay tuned.
Maybe.
Or not. Now, final thoughts on Us. So let's go with you, Chrissy. Let's start with you.
Well, I loved this film. in case nobody who listened to the, in case anybody who listened to the show did not get that. I highly recommend it, whether you are a thinking person who really likes to go and think and look and pick apart stuff, or whether you just want to go and be entertained. I certainly think that this movie appeals to both types of moviegoers, and I think it's definitely worth checking out. And really, that's all I'm going to say, because I think I've raved enough about how much I love this movie. So that's it. Go see it. And it's definitely worth the money to see it in the theater, too, if you're in the mood to do that.
All right. Very good. Abe.
I thought this was a great film overall. I thought it had strong performances, some great atmosphere, awesome soundtrack, some good scares, and some really tense moments. I did have some things that I felt a little weaker than others. Some points in the middle of the film for me were felt as strong as the first or last act. Even at the last act, there were some things that I felt were kind of, I would feel a little mixed on. But still, it's still a film I recommend checking out. I really do feel this film goes rank up high in terms of its placement for my list of 2019. Still way too early to tell where. But it's a film that you're definitely going to get something out of, in from whatever symbolism or metaphors you see. You know, as you heard tonight, each person had found something different. And it was just, as I said, go check it out if you have the time. And who knows? Maybe you'll enjoy it.
Sounds good. Mike?
Yeah, sometimes the best films are like the best meals. They taste just as good coming back up as they did going down the first time.
Yeah, that's a gross analogy.
I was talking more belching than vomiting. But yeah, this is a film that, yeah, I enjoyed it in the theaters, and I think it works as a horror film for me better than Get Out did, although I think Get Out works better as a film for me. It's got some great creepy stuff. A lot of it through stylish direction, through very very strong performances. It does for me falter a little bit, not a lot. This is not a shit the bed final act. I just maybe got a little over explainy, and the explanations didn't entirely work for me. But it does give you, if you are of that mind, listening to or participating in a Dark Discussion podcast, or the Facebook page, there is a lot to discuss and talk about. In an underlined civilized manner, right?
Right.
And that can add to the enjoyment of the film long after the film is over. So it's definitely a strong recommend. Obviously, because it's a success, it's going to be the horror movie that launches a million memes, at least for this season.
The next Bird Box.
Right, it's the next Bird Box. we're gonna have lots of jokes about everybody's looking at everybody, photoshopped, into the tether. We'll have the Justin Bieber tether or something, just whatever. And they'll have moments like that. So at the very least, you want to be hip to those jokes. So yeah, you got to watch it. I recommend.
All right, very good. I will just say what Mike said. Eric, your opinion.
I think this is a great movie. I really enjoyed it. I thought it's trying to deliver a message, and it's a little bit muddled as to what exactly that message is. But nevertheless, it's an extremely entertaining movie with a great score. I can't wait to give it another watch or two, and I really hope I get a commentary for it. So, yeah, high recommend for me.
Actually, what Eric said. All right.
That's what she said.
That's what she said. which is what I'm about to do once we click off.
Of course it is.
I have four episodes already in the queue.
Problems.
That's right. It's a good show, man. I have to rewatch it.
For the fifth time,
exactly. Actually, that is pretty true, yeah. in less than a month. The entire series.
Some people might use the word obsession.
Oh, God.
Yes, true.
coming soon to a podcast near you.
That's Us, 2019 film, sophomore film of Jordan Peele, Academy Award winner for Get Out, which should have been actually Three Billboards, but that's just my opinion. Great film all the same, and this film here is a solid follow-up to his debut film. So at the theaters now, should be there for a bit because it's making good change, though other horror films are about to hit, including Pet Sematary, which actually may oddly make Us fade out a little quicker than I would think, just for the fact that other big horror films are about to hit, names that are even bigger than Jordan Peele, specifically Stephen King. So it may actually be good to check it out within the next 2 weeks before Pet Sematary shows up.
And that's already one that is being hyperboled. You know, it's...
Yeah, that one's getting good reviews, too.
It's one of the greatest horror films ever. You know, it's...
Super Bowl 17.
Yeah, and Get Out, you know, Get Out came out in the dead of winter without a lot of competition, and Us isn't going to have that, but it also came out stronger out of the gate. So it'll be interesting to see where it ends up.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Nope, that's true. Yep. So with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right, thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about the Jordan Peele film Us. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.
I've got 5 on it.
Thank you.